To our right, the hill where the burghers lived had petered out. A tributary of the river cut across our path from that direction. The road crossed it on an ancient steel bridge, built, rusted, decayed, condemned, and pasted back together with new matter. A dotted line, worn away to near invisibility, hinted to motorists that they might consider showing a little civility to pedestrians between the rightmost lane and the railing. It was a bit late for us to double back now, and we could see another pedestrian pushing a cart piled high with polybags, so we hustled over as quickly as we could manage, trusting the Drummonds, Fetches, and Mobes not to strike us dead. To our left, we could see the tributary winding through its floodplain toward the join with the main river a mile away. When I had been younger, the angle between the two watercourses had been mostly trees and marsh, but it looked as though they had put up a levee to fend off high water and then shingled it with buildings. Most obviously, a large roofless arena with thousands of empty seats. "Shall we go watch a game?" Fra Jesri asked. I couldn't tell whether he was serious. Of all of us, he looked the most like an athlete. He didn't play sports often, but when he did, he was determined and angry, and tended to do well, even though he had few skills. "I think you need money to get in. Maybe we could sell some honey." "We don't have any of that either. Maybe later in the week." Jesri did not seem very satisfied with my answer. "It's too early in the morning for them to be having a game," I added. A minute later, he had a new proposal. "Let's pick a fight with some slines." We were almost to the end of the bridge. We had just scurried out of the path of a fetch operated by a man about our age who drove it as if he had been chewing jumpweed, with one hand on the controls and the other pressing a gee-jaw to the side of his face. So we were physically excited, breathing rapidly, and the idea of getting into a fight seemed a tiny bit less stupid than it would have otherwise. I smiled and considered it. Jesri and I were strong from winding the clock, and many of the extras were in terrible condition. I understood now what Quinn had meant when he had said that they were starving to death and dying from being too fat at the same time. When I looked back at Jesri, he scowled and turned his face away. He didn't really want to get into a fight with slines. We had entered into the Faubourg where I had come from. A whole block had been claimed by a building that looked like a megastore but was apparently some new counter-Bayesian arc. In the lawn before it was a white statue, 50 feet high, of some bearded prophet holding up a lantern and a shovel. The roadside ditches were full of jumpweed and slashberry poking up through sediments of discarded packaging. Beneath a gray film of congealed exhaust, faded kinograms fidgeted like maggots trapped in a garbage bag. The kinograms, the logos, the names of the snacks were new to me, but in essence it was all the same. I knew now why Jesri was being such a jerk. "It's disappointing," I said.
"Yeah,"
Jesri said. "All these years reading the chronicles and hearing strange tales told every day at Provener, I guess it sort of
raised our expectations,"
he said. "Yeah." Something occurred to me. "Did Orlo ever talk to you about the 10,000ers?
Causal Domain Shear and all that?"
Jesri looked at me funny, surprised that Orlo had confided in me. I nodded.
"That is a classic example of the crap they feed us to make it seem more exciting than it really is."
But I sensed Jesri had only just decided this. If Orlo was talking to all the Fids about it, how special could it be? "They're not feeding us crap, Jesri. It's just that we live in boring times." He tried a new tack.
"It's a recruiting strategy, or to be precise, a retention strategy."
"What does that mean?"
"Our only entertainment is waiting for the next appert, to see what's out there when the gates open. When the answer turns out to be the same crap except dirtier and uglier, what can we do besides sign up for another 10 years and see if it's any different next time?"
"Or go in deeper.
Become a hundreder? Haven't you realized that's worthless for us?"
"Because their next appert is our next appert," I said.
"And then we die before the next one after that." "It's not that rare to live to 130,
I demurred.
which only proved that I had done the same calculation in my head and come to the same conclusion as Jessery. He snorted. "You and I were born too early to be hundreders and too late to be thousanders. A couple of years earlier and we might have been foundlings and gone straight to the crag. In which case, we'd both die before seeing an appert," I said. "Besides, I might have been a foundling. But from what you've said of your birth family, I don't think you'd have." "We'll see soon enough," he said.